There's nothing called work-life balance. It's work-life harmony. So it's important for leaders to keep in mind that the people who are working for them are humans, and then things happening in their life kind of seeps into their work. So keeping that in mind while working with your team is super, super important. So for example, a practice which we used to do a lot, like spending the first 5 minutes not talking about work, talking about what's going on in your life.
Welcome to the Super Managers Podcast, where we interview leaders from all walks of life to tease out the habits, thought patterns, learnings, and experiences that help them be extraordinary at the fine craft of management. Our goal is to bring you the lessons and the insights so that you don't have to learn through your own mistakes, but so that you can shortcut your way to being a great leader. This podcast is brought to you by Fellow, a software platform that helps managers and their teams collaborate on meeting agendas, track action items, and turn chaotic meetings into productive work sessions. Check it out at www.fellow.app. Hey, fellow managers and leaders, I'm Aiden, and I'm the CEO of Fellow.app. Today, I'm very excited to introduce you to Raj Sarkar. He is a marketing leader, recently serving as the CMO at 1Password, and prior to that, leading large marketing teams at Atlassian and Google. And today, he's an advisor to a variety of different startups. He was recently listed as a Forbes Top 50 CMO. And we talk about a lot of different topics, including spending quite a bit of time talking about the art of feedback. And very specifically, Raj and I talked about the story of how he really learned to master the art of listening to feedback and how he used that to transform his career. And he will never look back. And this is one of the things that he very proactively does. And we talk about how you too can also learn how to listen to this feedback. So amazing stories there, but we also talk about his rule of three for giving feedback. We talk about how to build high-performing teams. Raj has three rules for that. And finally, one of the things that I know that a lot of creative teams have to tackle is, especially as your teams start to get larger, how do you continue to keep innovation as part of the mix? How do you keep your teams continuously innovating and not getting tunnel vision on the things that they're doing? And Raj gives us a masterclass in this episode on how to create an innovation week, what that means, how to put it together, tactically what you need to do, and some examples of how it's really changed the game for him at the organizations where he's implemented exactly that. So all in all, amazing conversation. Very excited to share it with you all. As always, if you haven't yet given us a 5-star review on this podcast, this really, really helps us promote the show. So if you could give us a 5-star review on your podcast app today, we'd really, really appreciate it. And of course, if you still haven't joined our Super Managers community, we have a Slack workspace, lots of great listeners of the show on that workspace, getting management advice, giving advice, talking about episodes, and it's a great place to hang out. If you want to join, send us an email to supermanagers@fellow.app. With that said, and without further ado, very excited to introduce you to Raj Sarkar on this episode of the Super Managers Podcast. Raj, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, very happy to have you on. There's a lot that we're going to get to talk about. You've worked at a bunch of very familiar companies, ex-CMO of 1Password, you're a senior leader at Atlassian and Google. And today you advise a bunch of different startups, your Forbes Top 50 Entrepreneurial CMO. So lots of stuff that we're going to talk about, lots of passion areas for you. But the question that we like to start with on the podcast is, do you remember when you were first leading a team, when you first started doing that, what were some of the early mistakes that you used to make?
Oh, man. So there are two phases in my career. One phase is the engineering phase, which was just for 4 years. So I leave the portion out. But let me talk about marketing, which I've been doing for the last 15 or 16 years. I remember specifically very clearly when first time I started leading a team, and this happened in Google. So as part of the GCP team at that time, this was potentially around 2011 or 2012. And I was a one-man show for a long time. So I launched Google Cloud Platform at Google I.O. And then I had my hands up that I can't do this work alone anymore. And I was leading for a headcount for the GCP marketing team. And I remember I had to negotiate with my manager for a long time before I got the headcount. And I was so excited when I got that headcount for the first time. I always liked to interact with people and see people grow. So it was like a new and exciting thing for me at that time. And I remember that vividly.
Yeah. And so let's dive into that. Do you remember something that maybe a mistake or something that you made early on or something that you were maybe not as good at in those early days?
I think one of the first mistake majority of the first time leaders or managers do, right? You have this natural instinct to be likable. So you say yes to a lot of things and you don't question stuff. Within a year or two of managing teams, one of my biggest revelation was I need to say no to more things than yes. One of the things, you know, I've learned over the years, I remember early on when I was a manager, I was trying too hard to please the people working for me. Now, as a leader, like when you are basically sitting in the C-suite, you know, managing a huge organization and working with the people from, you know, different cultural background, you know, different upbringing, you know that your style may be suitable for some people, maybe not suitable for all. So there will be always some people who will be unhappy with you. If everyone is happy with you in your team, you're doing something wrong.
I like that. So if everyone is happy with you, that you're doing something wrong. But obviously, this is in the context of the larger organization. If you have a team of three people, your team of three should probably be happy with you most of the time, I would say. But that's super helpful. Do you remember how you began to realize that? So it sounds like maybe in the beginning, it was more about being likable. It's just a natural tendency that most humans have. One of my favorite books out there is this book called The Courage to be Disliked, but something that I read much later in my career and wish I had read earlier. But do you remember like an example of, you know, something that caused you to shift and really change your approach to how you manage the team?
That changed primarily in Atlassian, I would say, because Google, I was just like a manager for probably a year or so. When it came to Atlassian, I remember initially I was doing exactly the same how you used to operate at Google. And then at a certain point in time, when you have to manage like low performance in your team, then you need to start having those hard conversations. And you realize early on that it's demoralizing for the rest of the team if you're not taking action. Because you're afraid to take that action because you're thinking that you're going to make that person unhappy or dislike you, right? You're not giving feedback as frequently as you're supposed to because you're trying to be, you know, likable for every single person in the team. So I think that is the first time when I started to realize, and even my boss at that time, my manager at that time, came to me and said, hey, you need to rectify this. You need to handle this situation. So I would say that is when I realized, okay, I need to not make everyone happy all the time. And there are certain scenarios where I have to be play the hardball and make, you know, someone in my team unhappy.
Raji, if you were to think about situations where people are likely to make this mistake, where do you think it comes up more often? Is it, would you say, in decision-making? Is it in giving feedback? What are some of the areas that maybe when you've observed other managers make this sort of mistake, where have you seen it more frequently?
I think two things you already kind of touched on, it, like decision-making and feedback. Decision-making is early on, if you're a new manager, it's very easy to make the decision for your team. Like, you know something, you'll go and make the decision for the team. I think it's very important for you to hold back on making the decisions and let your team make those decisions, right? And sometimes they might be unhappy that, hey, my manager is not making the decision for me, right? But you, like, as you grow, as you scale, as the organization gets bigger and bigger, if you have to run an organization a size of like 80 or 100 people, like, you won't be able to make every single decision in the organization as a leader. So your team needs to learn making those decisions. So it's easier as a early on as a manager to step in and say, oh, I'll make the decision for the team and make my team happy. Makes it easier for the team. But you should let them make the groundwork and let them come to the decision themselves then, rather than you making the decision. So that is number one. And number two is feedback. Like giving very frequent feedback, like especially, it's much easier to give easy feedback. It's much harder to give constructive feedback. And I think a lot of managers, and I know throughout my career, there were good managers and bad managers. So a lot of managers were just reluctant to give like negative and constructive feedback frequently. And I think you're doing a disservice to your team if you're not doing that, right? Again, this comes from the likability factor as well, right? I don't want to make someone upset, but even your, like some of your high performers in your team, they will appreciate if you actually give feedback more frequently.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to dig in on the feedback side, especially because I feel like this is a very hard to get right skill. It's one of those things that at least I've found that every year there's room even for me to improve, even though, say, I've been like a manager leader for a long time, especially when you're leading a team of more senior people, when maybe you have VPs reporting to you, right? And so you need to give them feedback as well. It's not going to be super obvious things, right? It's not going to be like, oh, you interrupted that person in the meeting. Maybe you shouldn't have, right? It's going to be like more deeply rooted things. And so my question for you is, what kind of ritual or habits do you have to make sure that you're able to like critically think about what kind of feedback you can give to a person to actually get them to level up? Because I find that it's not maybe super obvious things, but there are more things that you have to really, really think about.
First and foremost, the most important thing to remember, feedback is bidirectional. Usually as managers, you always assume that you're the one who should be giving feedback, but you should be taking feedback equally. Make it a habit within your organization. I think it's super, super important, especially nowadays. A lot of managers forget that, right? They usually tend to give feedback in a single direction and are not open to receiving feedback from the team. This also makes it easier for you to give feedback because you're asking feedback, right? And I use this strategy a lot when I'm giving feedback. I usually start off with, hey, do you have any specific feedback for me? And then, you know, obviously the person I'm talking to will turn around and say, hey, Raj, do you have any feedback for me? And then that's my opportunity to, you know, give feedback. So using that.
It's funny you asked that. As a matter of fact, I do.
So that's the first thing to remember, that feedbacks are usually bidirectional. A lot of people forget that. Number two, I usually don't give feedback just at a whim. I'm worried about that I'm going to send wrong signals to my team or to the people who are working for me. I usually do pattern matching, to your point. Like in a meeting, like a behavior, certain behavior one time doesn't necessarily need feedback. But there needs to be a consistent pattern you see and you hear it. I also validate with other people in my team just to make sure that I'm getting the right feedback. So you have to be very thoughtful. The second thing to remember here, like you have to be very thoughtful when you give feedback, because you can send that person in a wrong direction. So it's important that you do pattern matching when you give feedback. I always tell my team, like peer feedback, for example, right? I'm like, oh, this person X said something. And I was like, okay, did you hear the same feedback coming from Y or Z? If you don't hear the same feedback coming from Y or Z, this is like a one-time thing. You don't need to focus on it. So there is a lot of noise in the feedback. So you need to make sure that you get to the crux, the most important stuff for your team. And that's your job as a manager, as a leader, to do that.
Yeah. Some of this stuff is maybe correctional. It might be, for example, you did this, maybe it should have been approached differently. But some of this stuff is maybe a little bit more aspirational in the sense of like, in order for you to level up to the next level leader or the next level role that you have, you know, here's some feedback to help you do that. I find that that is particularly harder to do. And part of it is if you have seen, for example, someone else operate at a higher level, like you said, the pattern matching can say, well, I've seen others who've been in this role do these sorts of things that maybe, you know, you're not quite there yet. Are there any things that you've done, like when you're trying to help someone level up to the next level? And if you yourself haven't necessarily seen what that next level looks like, are there any tips or tricks that you have in order to give yourself that benchmark so you know what kind of developmental or aspirational feedback to give?
Yeah. So one of the things I usually do when I go into a new organization, when I'm running a new team, I set the baseline, like how important feedback is. And I use this example with myself as a person. There were times in my career where I got feedback and I completely ignored it. And majority of my career growth has come from the fact that I have listened to feedback. Once, like, there was a certain time in my career it flipped. And I was like, okay, this is the feedback I need to incorporate. Right? And I've seen my career trajectory just take off as soon as I started listening to feedback coming from different parts of the organization. And it's not just upward feedback, but downward feedback as well, like coming from your team. So I start off with that baseline and I make sure that my team knows this, that feedback is a gift. Usually you'll see, and even I did this at some point in my career as well, like people ignore the feedback. People don't take the feedback seriously. I have this rule of three. Like if I give you the feedback three times and you're not listening, because I will be thoughtful in giving feedback. And if I give you the feedback three times in a row and you haven't taken action against it, that means you're not listening to feedback. And then I need to have a deeper conversation with you, right? You know, and I think you will become stagnant as well. I feel that's what I tell my team. Like, hey, if I'm giving you feedback and you're not listening, then hey, you know, it's your career. It's like I'm trying to help you be successful, right? So I think setting the baseline that, hey, how this feedback has helped me grow as a person, because I were in their shoes at one point in time. I was a PMM as well, right? I was part of an organization. And the only way I've grown in my career is by listening to feedback. And I set that kind of foundation in place with my team. So my team understands that this is something which I rely on. And then I am also very much dependent on our organization being successful based on how my team takes feedback.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the questions I have on that is, you mentioned that early on in your career, maybe you didn't listen to feedback that closely. I'm not sure if you want to share, but do you remember what that feedback was and like what caused you to all of a sudden pivot and start listening to it?
Sure. I think the first moment of change, I remember this, was Atlassian. I was responsible for the Bitbucket Cloud payment team. And my CEO basically made a comment in the Slack. His intention was basically he wanted to see this product. Now, when I look back, I was like, okay, that's his reason was basically push us. And then I gave like a defensive comment. I made a defensive comment on the public Slack and then everyone saw it. Right? And then my manager came and had a sit down conversation with me and said, hey, you know, this is what you need to understand. These are the X, Y, and Z you need to do better. Right. First of all, any hard conversation after that, I usually don't do it on Slack because Slack is the worst place to have like you know, any kind of conflict, right? I always have this, especially even with remote work, like always do face-to-face. Like Zoom is super important because you can't see the person. You don't know what the person is thinking, right? So anyway, so that was basically, I was like, okay, maybe I need to start collecting feedback from across the organization. You're always afraid to collect feedback because you don't know what people are going to say. So I hired a leadership coach. And the leadership coach basically went and talked to my peers, talked to my bosses, talked to the people I was managing, collected all this feedback, correlated that feedback to me. So there are a few feedback I got, which was like, I was super aggressive. I was always thinking about myself. I was not thinking about everyone else I was working with. So that was one time when I completely changed my behavior based on the feedback I got from across the organization. So that is one example. I think second example was I was almost getting fired from Atlassian. And this is basically, I think the feedback I got is like I was being super aggressive, not with my team. My team loved me, but my cross-functional peers. And I remember my manager came to me and like, I know, Raj, you don't want to be an asshole. But that's how you're perceived across the organization. It was almost like an existential question for me, because I know that some of the feedback you get professionally, maybe it's applicable in your personal life as well. So for example, I talked to my friends. And I was like, okay, do I come across like that? Like, I'm not a listener. That was like more like, you know, a change I made, not only in my professional life, but in my personal life as well. I started listening more. I felt like I was listening less. So I started practicing that in my daily personal life. It kind of showed in my professional life as well. And it completely changed me as a leader. Like how, you know, I manage team, how I work cross-functionally has completely morphed me as a leader right now.
Hey, super managers. I'm Ariana, product marketing specialist at Fellow. Are you feeling overwhelmed and frustrated by the number of unproductive meetings clogging up your day? On March 14th, Fellow 4.1 is launching. And this time, we're bringing you 4 steps to have more effective meetings and how our new features help support productive meeting habits. Don't let meetings get the best of you and your team. Large, long, and unproductive meetings are a thing of the past with Fellow. Join us live on March 14th to save your spot to be one of the first to experience Fellow 4.1. Go to fellow.app/live/launch to register or click the link in the episode description. We hope to see you there. Now, back to the episode.
Thank you for sharing that. Really appreciate the story and the vulnerability, of course, in mentioning something like that. But we've seen it in your career, right? Like I was looking up your LinkedIn right before, and it's just obviously definitely seen at Atlassian where you're talking about this, like constantly getting more and more responsibility. Clearly the listening to feedback worked and we're able to like really advance in your leadership career there. So one thing that is really interesting is just this concept of, like you said, being able to listen, gather that information, and then make those changes. And again, like feedback is a gift. So it really clearly shows how this trajectory can take effect. To switch gears for a second, one of the topics I also wanted to chat with you about, you obviously have led large teams in the marketing function, have a lot of knowledge in PLG across companies. One of the things I thought would be really interesting for us to chat about is what your thoughts are on team dynamics when there are certain teams that tend to work together, for example, say sales and marketing or customer success. And in an organization where it's starting to become trendy, for example, to hire functions like a chief revenue officer or a chief growth officer, such that like all of those teams report up into the same person. I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts on that as a trend, why some companies may get those functions to report into the same person, and just anything that you've learned around that.
I think the reason I feel like that is going to happen more and more, you know, in the long run is because how selling in B2B SaaS has changed in the last 20 years or so. Like if you go 20 years back, the way businesses will buy a product, there is no way for a business to try out a product. So they will go and like talk to the salesperson first. So the product is building the product. The salesperson will have a conversation with the customer. And then an intense dating process will start, which will probably last like a few months. And then after 6 or 12 months, the business will buy the product. That has changed completely now. Now you can go to a website, click on a sign up and get into a product immediately. Right? So you get exposure to the product immediately. So as a result, the whole process on how you sell to B2B customers have changed drastically. The definition of sales, marketing, and product, the age-old definition is kind of getting blurrier and blurrier. This is why I talk about like how, especially for PLG products, how sales, marketing, and product are like kind of converging. Like you cannot bifurcate the funnel. You need to look at the funnel end to end. As a result, you see, I mean, it's happening in some companies. In Atlassian, for example, the president, Jay Simons, managed customer success, sales, marketing, all used to report to one person. And you see that happening in a lot of other organizations as well. So I see that trend happening more and more, especially when it comes to B2B SaaS. I'm not talking about B2C because it's a very different ballgame. That's one of the reasons why I keep saying like, hey, you'll see this more in the near future.
So the thing that I want to get at here is it's a very interesting trend that's happening, like you said, and you kind of explained why that happened. So these three different functions, sometimes it makes sense to hire one leader where all these three functions will report to the same person. I guess my question for you is, what happens if you don't have these three teams reporting to the same person. And the reason that I'm asking this is I kind of want to get to the heart of, as a leader of an organization, when might you think that certain problems can be solved through this method of getting them to report to the same person?
Yeah, you don't have to. Like, for example, product and sales didn't report to the same person in Atlassian. And in majority of the organizations, that's not how it works. I think, first of all, it starts with the leaders. The leaders need to work together really, really well. And then the team is going to do as a result of that, because the leaders are a reflection of the teams. We had this model called, we used to call this the squad model in Atlassian. So product, design, marketing, and engineering was formed a squad. Now, Atlassian is a company with lots of products. So each product had that squad model. And then in my last role, we called it the all teams portfolio of products. So there was a leader for each of those particular functions who used to meet on a weekly basis to talk about each of their functions. So everyone knew like what product is doing. So for example, I would know what product is doing, what design is doing, what engineering is doing. So the work didn't happen in silos. So we used to work really well together. So we had this squad model. We had an exclusive channel, Slack channel for that. We used to meet on a weekly basis. So that's how I think you can encourage collaboration between these different functions within the organization.
Yeah, the squad model makes a lot of sense. And would you say, like, what is the unifying factor? So when you're considering something like this, is it when all of them, for example, have the same North Star metric that they're trying to get to? Like, how do you figure out how to get these teams to form a squad in that way?
So the four of the four team members I talked about, we will create the OKR for our organization together. So there was, it's not like marketing had their own OKRs, product had their own OKRs, sales had their own OKRs. So for each product, it's basically there was one OKR, and then each OKR will, obviously like marketing will own the customer number, for example, product will own the revenue number. But that was basically our guiding North Star for the entire organization.
Yeah. So when there is that guiding North Star or that OKR that really brings all the teams together, that might be a sign where that kind of a pod or a squad structure can make sense.
100%.
So since we're talking about teams, one of the things that I know you're also passionate about, you've hired a lot of people in your career, created a lot of teams. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, what have you learned about getting a team to be a high performing one, whether it's from like creating that team or to encouraging that team? Like, what are some of the elements, some of the lessons that you've learned along the way?
I'm sure you're familiar with this study which Google did around teams, like what makes successful teams. And one of the things they talk about is psychological safety. I think building a culture where everyone feels psychologically safe is super, super important. And how do you build that? There are a few things which I talk about a lot with my teams in general. Number one, I call it radical candor. I'm sure you've heard about this. It's very popular.
Yeah, we've had Kim Scott on the show as well. So definitely, yeah.
So I'm a huge fan of radical candor. And it starts with, you know, the leaders in the organization. Like, you have to encourage radical candor within the organization. I think it's very important, especially nowadays, for organizations to be open and transparent so that people can raise their flag, you know, hands and say, hey, there is some problem happening in this particular function, Raj, we need to fix it, right? They should feel safe to do that. So that's, I think, I would say the first foundation to building a team which feels psychologically safe. Number two is encouraging failures. Because if you're not failing, then you're not stretching your boundaries enough, right? You're playing it too safe. And people should, like, you know, encouraging that to happen within an organization, like even celebrating failures is important to create a culture of psychological safety within your team. So I would say that is basically what I call like the second pillar. And then third is, nowadays it has become more and more important because of remote work. Your personal life and your work life are intertwined. There is nothing called work-life balance. It's work-life harmony. So it's important for leaders to keep in mind that the people who are working for them are humans, and then things happening in their life kind of seeps into their work. So keeping that in mind while working with your team is super, super important. So for example, a practice which we used to do a lot, like spending the first 5 minutes not talking about work, talking about what's going on in your life. So those are the three things I would say I believe are foundational to create high-performing teams.
That's super helpful, and thanks for pointing it out in that way. On the third point that you mentioned, one of the practices that you would do is not spend the first 5 minutes talking about work, say in a one-on-one with someone on your team. Are there any good ways that you found to start a conversation to really get to know someone more personally or what's going on in their life? Because what I have noticed is sometimes you default to the maybe super easy stuff, maybe the weather or, you know, what you did that weekend, and you kind of like check that box and then move on to the work topic. So yeah, I wonder, you know, is there anything that you do that you found helpful that others can learn from?
Genuine caring about your people.
Yeah, that definitely works.
It cannot be faked, right? Like if I'm talking to my manager for hypothetically, and then the manager basically doesn't engage or doesn't care what's going on with my life, then obviously I will stop sharing that, you know, with my manager. So I think fundamental, it basically boils down to, do you actually really care or not? You know, you can't fake it. I mean, it has to come from genuine care. And then automatically it will happen. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take some time, especially if you go to in a new role in a new organization. You can't build it overnight. And then over time, like the team will start realizing, hey, Aiden and Raj really care about their team. So it will just automatically happen. Like you don't even have to.
Yeah, I love that. That is actually the best way to answer that question, which is it's not a question you can ask or a hack. You kind of have to start with where the motivation is. And with the motivation, the rest will come. But you're right. People can detect it. Even if I do a really good job, ask you that really great question that gets you to tell me something, you'll know if I really care or not. So yeah, that's super helpful. Raj, one of the other things, again, just because you've had in your work experience, like a lot of managing creative teams and coming up with new ideas, creating products, one of the things that I wonder if it does become more difficult, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on, is when you're a small team, and I know you were part of, for example, a lot of products that were very nascent, like new products, and it's very early on. And as time grows, have you found that it becomes harder to stay innovative or creative? And if not, and you found a way around that, would love to know how you've kept that going.
Yeah. You're familiar with the term hackathons, right? Like ship it and we used to call it ship it. So, and even Google used to call it like 20% project, like for engineers, right? You can devote 20% of your time to work on something outside your basically day-to-day job, right? And Elastic used to do like ship it's for a week where you can not, like, for example, you're both part of the Bitbucket team, but you wanted to work something exciting on Confluence for a week. You can go and like hack, build something. At the end of the week, you basically share it with everyone, right? And then the top three get prizes, right? So I started something similar in Atlassian, and I used to call this Innovation Week. And the idea here was that for a week, you'll not do any meetings, you know, not do your regular day-to-day job. This is the week, basically, you can put your pencils down and start thinking about wild ideas, which you get a free rein, and you basically come up with a wild idea, and you can pitch it to the marketing org. I found that it worked. Like some of the great ideas, basically, marketing ideas came from that Innovation Week. It's almost like a similar, like a hackathon week or a, you know, a shit bit week, but it's basically with the marketing flavor. Because usually what usually happens is like you get stuck in a rut, right? You are always working on it. You don't get time to think about, you know, what interesting thing I can do, which we are not doing already. So I started doing that. Like every quarter, I'll just put like an Innovation Week, and that week you basically think about all the interesting stuff we can do, which we are not doing, and then present it, pitch it to the team. And then the team will vote and we'll take the top three ideas and do it.
Yeah, that is really awesome. And background for the audience, I think typically in a lot of organizations that try the hackathon thing, the versions I've heard of it are, again, very developer-centric because developers can go build something. So this is really cool to hear you say that you were doing this for the marketing team. And what's also interesting is a lot of times I've heard of this concept, but people have done it for 24 to 48 hours. But it's very interesting. Like, you actually clear a whole week, and you did it as much as once a quarter. So this is a true commitment. And so tactically speaking, I think a lot of marketing teams maybe have regular things, deliverables that they have. So say like you run a weekly podcast, or you have different sort of weekly tasks. So this requires coordination so you can like really free up that week.
Yeah. It's not easy to do. Because it's almost like taking a vacation, right? There's never a good time to take a vacation. But this is like the entire organization is not working, which is, you know, hard thing to do. So you have to pick the time wisely. Like I say, a week sometime you are forced to do it within 2 or 3 days, because to your point, like you cannot stop working for a week. There are regular stuff to take care of. But I think the most important thing is finding some time in your regular like schedule to do this, as I think is important. And you have to be pencils down while that is happening. You do the same thing with hackathons as well. Like when you do ship it at Atlassian, like you are allowed not to do work for like 48 hours or something like that.
Yeah. I'm curious. So in this particular model, since it was a marketing initiative, was your team also collaborating with other parts of the company, or was it like they really tried to keep it within themselves?
We did this 1Password once. So 1Password is easy because it was the entire marketing arc. But Atlassian, there was other teams, right? Because my team was responsible for a certain, you know, group of products. So it was not like all the teams were participating. But there is one thing I did. I remember this. Within this innovation week, we had an innovation day. And what we did is we had speakers come from outside. We picked each function, like one speaker for brand, one speaker. I remember the Gone Google campaign. Basically, someone came and talked about Gone Google campaign. So people come from outside. That particular date, everyone participated within the marketing org, because I opened it up like, hey, anyone can come and join. But the other stuff, it's just my team. Not everyone was doing it.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because like if you don't purposefully, like you mentioned, like insert this, there's no perfect time to take a vacation. There's a lot of things that, but once it's on the calendar, then it's a thing that people can do. And what I find is that once it's on the calendar and it's pre-scheduled and you know that it's coming, people are going to have creative ideas throughout the quarter. And this is a thing that they can maybe start creating lists for and say, oh, the next time innovation week happens, this is something I can work on and I can get a whole week to work on it. And yeah, I think that is a super helpful idea. One other thing that I wanted to chat with you about is, and again, around just getting performance and getting teams to really work well together. And we kind of touched on this a little bit when we were talking about different teams and when you have similar OKRs to get them to report to the same function. It's just this concept of ownership. This is one of the things that when organizations or teams get right, makes a big difference. Would love to hear your thoughts around, you know, how do you get your teams, your people to exhibit more ownership across the board?
Yeah, this is a hard nut to crack. I always keep saying that everyone needs to wear the founder's hat. And again, it starts from the leaders. The leaders have to show that they care about the company. I not only care about the marketing function, but I also care about what's going on in product and engineering. You know, if there is something broken, I go and fix it. It doesn't matter what my role is within the organization. So you have to set an example for everyone within your team. I mean, that's the only way you can develop whatever you call it, the ownership. I call it the founder's mindset. There's a book called Founder's Mindset, by the way, which is awesome. And if you haven't read it, I would.
No, I haven't read it. I will check it out.
Yeah. But it's basically you teach by example. That's all I can say. I don't think there is any like stick or carrot there, which like at least from my experience, I can't give you any specific examples that have worked. I will just say that for me, it was more like I would tell my team, like everyone needs to wear the founder's hat and then show by example.
This has been a great conversation. We've talked about so many different things. We've talked about learning how to say no, listening to feedback, the rule of three, your three rules for creating a high-performing team, and a masterclass on how to create an innovation week. So all around, super insightful conversation. The last question we like to ask, and we ask this from all the guests on the show, which is, for all the managers and leaders constantly looking to get better at their craft of managing teams, are there any final tips, tricks, or words of wisdom that you would leave them with?
I already touched on it. Give and ask feedback. That's the most important thing you can do for your career. Feedback is a gift. Don't forget that.
That's great advice and a great place to end it. Raj, thanks so much for doing this.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Super Managers Podcast. You can find the show notes and transcript at www.fellow.app/supermanagers. If you like the content, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe so you can get notified when we post the next episode. And please tell your friends and fellow managers about it. It'd be awesome if you could help us spread the word about the show. See you next time.